From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
And welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. How is everyone today? I am Mary Welter, sitting in for Brian Kilmeade. Boy, what a busy hour we have here. Coming up later this hour, Brett Tolman will be joining us. He is the former United States Attorney for the District of Utah, so we'll be talking to him later. But we're going to kick this hour off with Byron York. I can't believe I just said Brian. Hope he forgives me. Byron York, chief political correspondent for the Washington Examiner. He is a Fox News contributor, and you can find him on X at Byron York. Byron, welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. How are you?
Good morning. I'll answer to both. It's okay.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. Okay. So we got to start off with here, right? We got to start off with last night's propaganda ad for Kamala Harris. What was your gut reaction when you watched it or listened to it, however you did it?
Well, it's funny. I watched it, and then this morning I've been reading the transcript because it's, you know, you need to look carefully at what she was saying. And one of the things I thought I would do is, well, why don't I look and see what she said about the issues that people say, voters say, are most important to them, the top three being inflation, and immigration, and abortion. Now, we know where she stands on abortion, absolutely, totally clear. She's not flip-flopping. She's always been for unrestricted abortion rights, any place, anytime. I was reading what she said about inflation. She says a couple of times that she's very, very proud to have brought inflation down below 3%. Now, she does not mention that that's actually higher than it was when she and Joe Biden took office. It was actually 1.4% in January 2021, went all the way up to 9.1%. We know all this. And she will not acknowledge that inflation shot up during her time in office. And her solution to inflation is to give people money to pay higher prices. In other words, to give them a child tax credit. By the way, the only time she ever uses the word tax is as tax credit. Give people money for tax credit so they can pay higher prices with it. Give people a tax credit to buy a house so they can pay a higher price for the house. And continue to feed inflation. She seems to just have a complete, you know, misunderstanding of what she and Joe Biden have done in the past 4 years.
Yeah, I thought that was very interesting. She also had made some claims about the economy. She said it had crashed. Remember, she had said that, and you brought up, you know, the economy grew in the third quarter of 2020 at an annual pace of almost 35%. That's huge, and that's in the third quarter of 2020. And then it grew at an annual rate of 4.2% and then 5.2%. So her, oh my gosh, we inherited this crashed economy, was just a load. So I'm so glad, you know, you bring up the point of reading it versus just watching it. And I also think there's a difference when you listen to it and you don't see the body language as well. I think you walk away with something different. One thing I noticed last night to that point was that she looked hunched over. She looked like she was at the kids' table at Thanksgiving.
Yeah, yeah. It was not well staged. I was kind of surprised at that. You know, if there were a big interview, you know, Trump, who was a TV star before running for office, would never have done a setting like that, I don't think. So it looked bad, and a number of people thought that it kind of looked like Tim Walz was her lawyer. I mean, because you have seen these interviews, you know, with somebody who's accused of a crime, and they do the interview with the lawyer sitting right next to them to make sure they don't, you know, get themselves in trouble. So it was just a physically odd setup. I would blame CNN for that. Maybe they just didn't have a better facility to do it in. But it looked kind of odd. You're right.
And it didn't work for her. I thought she looked tired, and I thought she looked like she was hunched over. And I get that campaigning's hard. I can't imagine what that's like. So I give that to anybody who's campaigning. I get that you're going to look tired. I understand that. I just thought overall she didn't look great. And I thought that that was interesting. I had retweeted out and a friend had sent to me a picture of her and Walls, and he's wearing like one of those vests that the animals wear and says emotional support animal on it.
Yeah, right.
Right. But I love the idea that he
was kind of odd. And I mean, on the other hand, I mean, Dana Bash, the benefit of having Walls there was I got to ask him a couple of questions about the confusion over things that he said about his service in the National Guard, and also about his and his wife's use of IVF or non-use of IVF. And the, I mean, Walt's answers were basically, you know, I just don't speak English very well.
Well, you know, to that point, let's go to cut seven. We, for people who didn't hear it, we have that. And I'm glad you brought that up. It's cut seven, Eric. Here's Governor Walz doing it, talking about what Byron's saying about his misrepresenting his military service.
The idea that you said that you were in war. Yeah. Did you misspeak, as the campaign has said?
Yeah, I said we were talking about, in this case, this was after a school shooting, the ideas of carrying these weapons of war. And my wife, the English teacher, told me my grammar's not always correct. But again, if it's not this, it's an attack on my children for showing love for me, or it's an attack on my dog. I'm not going to do that. And the one thing I'll never do is I'll never demean another member's service in any way. I never have, and I never will.
So did he just blame stolen valor on bad grammar?
I think he did. He just, you know, I just don't, my grammar is just not that good. And, you know, this is not the worst offense in the whole world. I mean, he could have said, listen, in this case, I mean, on a bunch of occasions, I've described my service, which was 24 years. I've described my service completely accurately. This time, obviously, I exaggerated. I shouldn't have, but I'm sorry that I did that, and I would direct your attention to all the times I've described it accurately. I mean, he could just say that and just get over it. You know, the idea that it was a grammar problem, and he. He, like all of us in this conversation, is a native English speaker. It was just a grammar problem. It's not really believable.
Okay, so there are so many examples of this, and we will get into it obviously as we go on. But I really want to pick your brain. So I promise everyone, we will get to some of these cuts coming up. Why do you think it is that neither one of them was capable of saying, yeah, you know, we made a mistake, and then moving on with it? Why is it a politician thing? Do we just write it off to the fact that they're politicians? But it even on CNN last night, I watched the after show just to see what they were going to say. I went on like, oh, this is going to be great. They're going to be, you know, have balloons and fireworks for her, and they didn't, which really surprised me. But they made that point several times. This was such an easy answer for her or him, and they didn't do it. Why is that?
Well, there's a weird situation. First of all, a lot of politicians just don't do that very much. I don't think Donald Trump does that very much. He very occasionally he'll say, I made a mistake, but not a lot. And basically, she put herself in a very weird position because, I mean, obviously she's been in power, the vice president, for the last 3.5 years. And at times she spoke with pride about the Biden administration's accomplishments. And then at other times, she spoke about ending the Trump era. You know, we've been in this Trump era for 8 to 10 years now, and she wants to end that. And you think, well, wait a minute. You've been the president vice president for the last 3.5 years. So she's in this weird position of trying to defend everything she's done, and yet attack where we are now and say that we've got to fix this, we've got to fix that, when Joe Biden has been the president, she's been the vice president. So she's in a – vice presidents are always, when they run, are always in a kind of a weird position, and she's in an even weirder one because she's running with to succeed a president who actually had to pull out of the race because he wasn't able to continue.
Right. And that was the other thing. She was asked about that. And let's see. Do we have that, Eric? Let me see. We're looking at it. Oh, cut four. Okay. Yeah. Let's. Oh, it's right on the first page. Yeah. Cut four. I just want to play this very quickly. This is where she was asked if she has any regrets about telling us that, you know, Joe Biden has a date on Jeopardy next week. Here we go.
Vice President Harris, you were a very staunch defender of President Biden's capacity to serve another 4 years. Right after the debate, you insisted that President Biden is extraordinarily strong. Given where we are now, do you have any regrets about what you told the American people?
No, not at all. Not at all. I have served with President Biden for almost 4 years now, and I'll tell you, it's one of the greatest honors of my career, truly. And I have spent hours upon hours with him, be it in the Oval Office or the Situation Room. He has the intelligence, the commitment, and the judgment and disposition that I think the American people rightly deserve in their president.
So no apologies for lying to us.
Well, if all that's true, why don't we elect him again? I mean, if all that's true, why isn't he running right now? I mean, it's just astonishing the way she just, I mean, you talk about not admitting a mistake. I mean, she basically said, all those times I vouched that Joe Biden was sharp and on the top of his game, it's all true. And you think, no, it's not. It couldn't be true. He's not the candidate now. There's got to be a reason. And the reason was he was not physically and mentally able to run for a second term.
Yeah. So last question. She clearly was trying to distance herself from Joe Biden and the Biden-Harris record, Bidenomics, et cetera, even though she said, you know, they did great on the economy, and Dana used the word Bidenomics, and she kind of danced around that. Did she successfully distance herself from Joe Biden last night?
No, not at all. Not at all. The big question, though, is... As far as the voting public is concerned, to the degree that they watch this interview, and of course most of them did not watch the interview, they might hear about it, they might see clips. What impression are they going to take away from this? Are they going to look at her manner and say, well, you know, she seems kind of moderate and kind of straight down the middle, and she's not, you know, she's not mean and she's not, you know, over hot or anything like that. She's not, you know, like. And they might look at that and think, wow, she's okay. Or they may look at this and say, you know, she can't tell the truth about her time in office. I mean, you and I are parsing every word that she said. The rest of them may look at her and say, yeah, it's okay. I don't know how voters are going to react to this.
Yeah. I am somewhat disappointed that she did not devolve into a word salad. You know, she gets caught on a couple of words.
Right.
And she did not. And I'll just go to quickly to cut one. I'm sorry. there's so much I want to talk to you about. Cut one. I really thought she was going there with this.
You mentioned the Green New Deal. I have always believed, and I have worked on it, that the climate crisis is real. That it is an urgent matter to which we should apply metrics that include holding ourselves to deadlines around time. We did that with the Inflation Reduction Act.
She starts talking about time and it goes sideways.
I know. I had the same thought as you did. I thought, oops, here we go. She's going to start talking about time, you know, and it's going to be some weird conceptual word salad. But it didn't happen, and she mostly stayed. Look, the interviewer, my feeling is that the interview did the minimum required to challenge her on things.
Right.
It didn't, you know, when it did challenge an answer that she made, it didn't challenge it over and over again. It didn't really hit her with particulars that would make it harder for her one, you know, particular BS defense of this or that to maintain it. So it was not, it was not what I call a hard hitting interview. It was not a completely friendly, you know, kind of Joy Reid or Rachel Maddow sort of interview. But it was really not very challenging. And I have to say, I mean, it's the first time she's taken a series of questions, and for all we know, it could be the last. I mean, clearly,
right.
I think she would say, well, there's no reason to talk before the debate. That's a week from next Tuesday. No reason to do that. And then after that, we're, you know, post Labor Day and the big campaign. Sorry, don't have time. I think it's entirely possible that this is the only one that we'll ever see.
Wow. You know, you're absolutely right. Yeah, that's probably it. So, and listen, when the interviewer gives you multiple choice answers, how hard is it really? So,
well, the interviewer did give her, you know, when you say, why did you do that? You stop there, okay?
Right.
But in this case, she said, is it because you were trying to do A or were you trying to do B? And, you know, you're giving her choices. And what you really just need to say is, you did this. Why did you do this? You know,
exactly.
But we didn't get that.
No, we did not. Well, Byron York, thank you so much. I always enjoy getting to speak to you. I love your analysis.
Thank you. Great to be here. Catch him
on Fox. Also look for him in the Washington Examiner and on X at Byron York. Have a fantastic day, rest of your day.
Bye-bye.
More coming up on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, it's Clay Travis. Join me for Outkick the Show as we dive deep into a mix of topics. New episodes available Monday to Friday on your favorite podcast platform and watch directly on outkick.com/watch.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Do you still want to ban fracking?
No, and I made that clear on the debate stage in 2020 that I would not ban fracking. As vice president, I did not ban fracking. As president, I will not ban fracking.
In 2019, I believe, in a town hall, you said you were asked, would you commit to implementing a federal ban on fracking on your first day in office? And you said, there's no question I'm in favor of banning fracking. So, yes. So it changed in that campaign?
In 2020, I made very clear where I stand. We are in 2024, and I've not changed that position, nor will I going forward. I kept my word, and I will keep my word.
Ooh, problem with that is she didn't make it to 2020 because she dropped out. 866-408-7669. Let's go to Leslie joining us from Alberta, Canada, to talk about fracking. Leslie, you're on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi.
Hi. I have a little different approach when I'm trying to decide how someone feels about something, and that is, first you have to decide if they know what they're talking about. So if you were to ask Kamala what the concept of fracking, what is that? What's the process? How is fracking done? Why do we need fracking? What's the end result? What's the difference between a semi-automatic weapon and an automatic weapon? She won't know. What does AR rifle mean? She won't know that's Armalite, instead she'll say it's an automatic rifle.
Right.
And so when you try to discover and let them hang themselves with a new rope, when they tell you that they don't know what they're talking about, then you know that their policies aren't going to stick. And that would be my approach with her.
Yeah, that would have been great. But I think Byron made a really great point that's probably the one and only interview. That's it. We're not going to hear from her again until the debate, even if they go to the debate. She's trying to backtrack. She wants to have notes now. I will not be surprised if she somehow manages to wiggle out of the debate and blames it on Trump. That's what I'm waiting for. But I love that. I think that those are really great questions, and those can be used, helpful hint, if you're online and you're in it with someone who differs from you, ask them questions like that. They can't answer it, and they usually punch out. Leslie, thank you so much for joining us. Those are great, great points, and that would have been great had Dana Bash done that. Coming up, Brett Tolman from Right on Crime and former U.S. Attorney District for Utah joining us next on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I'm Mary Walters sitting in for Brian Kilmeade. Welcome. Joining us now is Brett Tolman. He's executive director for Right on Crime. He's a former United States attorney for the District of Utah. You can find him on X at Tolman Brett, T-O-L-M-A-N, Brett. Brett Tolman, thank you for joining me here on the Brian Kilmeade Show. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for having me, Mary.
Absolutely. There is so much to get into because while everyone's talking about the fluff piece on CNN last night, the propaganda ad that we saw, there's a lot of other things going on, including an impending sentencing of former President Donald Trump that's coming up in just, September 18th, right? So that's not that far away. So there's a lot of questions that go around that. My first question to you that I think a lot of people are talking about, and then we'll get into what's happening behind the scenes, but do you honestly think that Judge Mershon is going to sentence former President Trump to jail? Would he remand him to jail? And if so, doesn't that kind of win him the election, I would think?
Yeah, you know, Mary, it's a great question at a difficult calculation. And the reality is, if the sentencing goes forward, and I say if, because the Supreme Court's immunity ruling was very clear that evidence used in a case presented to a jury, evidence used of actions or conduct by the president while he was president, have to be scrutinized because even if they're in their unofficial capacity, he may have some immunity. And so at this point, I'm not sure it's going to go forward. But if it does, do I think he's going to sentence him to jail? I do. I think he relishes that. I think they can't help themselves.
I listen, this is just me, but I firmly believe that Judge Merchan's going to do what he's told to do. Right. That and Democrats have a tendency to overplay their hand. So I agree with you. I think they'll sentence him to jail to take him. But it's election interference. But I think the visual of Donald Trump in handcuffs being led off to jail, the left is going to go crazy. They're going to go apoplectic. They're going to, you know, there's going to be parades and fireworks and the whole bit. And they're going to be so happy. But on the right, there's a lot of people that is going to make really, really mad. And I think there are some people who are independents and that's going to make them mad, especially that close to the election. And I think it would be a huge mistake, a big miscalculation on the Democrats' part if that happens. And I just want to see it because he's got to take his Secret Service with him. So I'm not quite sure how that's going to happen. And if they do it, I want him to do it as a reality show because he's going to be running, you know, cell block C but within a week.
Well, I've spoken to some mutual friends, some that are, you know, very close to the president right now. The Secret Service and President Trump have worked out what's going to happen. They have a plan. They have, you know, a practical response that they're going to have to embrace and if he is sentenced to jail. But I agree with you. I think that I think it was very powerful when they took the mugshot, but think of everything that's happened with RFK Jr. and Tulsi Gabbard coming around and Elon Musk, and they're highlighting the disparate treatment in their efforts to now support Donald Trump. I think it's going to be, you know, on steroids from when he had his mugshot. I think it's going to be that big of an event if that's what they decide to do.
Absolutely. Now, let's talk a little bit about what's going on behind the scenes. You kind of touched on it. Trump's team now wants the trial, the sentencing, I guess, the sentencing part of this moved out of Merchan's courtroom. Where does he want it moved to? Wants it on a federal level?
What they're attempting to do is to say that they exceeded the scope of the state's authority when they presented, in essence, federal law, which the supremacy clause would you know, say, hey, if it is a federal law, then it takes place in a federal court. I think that's what they're trying to argue. I think it's going to be difficult. As bad as the case is, that Alvin Bragg brought and as ridiculous of the evidence that was presented, you do have a state statute that would allow them to proceed, which they did use. And the underlying felony is, yes, a crime, federal crime, but it's not clear on whether or not that, you know, is unacceptable. And so I think the real relief will come on appeal and probably ultimately at the Supreme Court.
Right. And of course, that's going to be after the fact. So I guess the game here is take him off the campaign trail, throw him in jail, hope that that's enough to get Kamala over the finish line, which for a lot of people it will be. So I think it's going to be dicey. So let's say if she wins, they come back and they go, oh, yeah, look, oh, this never should have been brought. Sorry. And look what they've done to Trump. Right. That's the game.
Well, you see how easily they're able to, you know, be hypocrites on issues. And so that would not surprise me. I do think that right now the effort needs to be put into pushing the sentencing back because there are genuine issues that need to be dealt with around the Supreme Court's immunity decision. And you know, like it or not, it is something that is being taken very seriously by the Manhattan DA's office. Maybe not Alvin Bragg, but I hear from friends in that office that, you know, there's concern. There's concern that, you know, they have to address the immunity decision, and that has not been done. So if I were Trump's legal team at this point, I'd be moving to push that back further and further, and ultimately, hopefully, never.
Yeah. No, well, it's good to know that there are some people in the SDNY that actually are a little impartial. Jack Smith, he's back at it again. And I saw now that case I thought was pretty much dead, the whole Jack Smith case about the documents and everything that's going on there. How is that now being revived?
Well, it's being revived by, you know, bad lawyering and irresponsible attempt to, you know, redo an indictment that was fatally flawed after the Supreme Court's decision. I mean, this is, in essence, if you read this, you know, this is the exact same indictment, having taken out a few references to DOJ, not addressing immunity at all, not addressing absolute immunity, and not addressing, you know, partial immunity based on, you know, official facts conducted while in unofficial capacity. The Supreme Court was very clear on what had to happen. Instead, they couch a First Amendment right to challenge an election, an absolute right to use a legal team to attempt to challenge an election. Nothing unusual about that, nothing criminal. But to package all of that into a conspiracy to claim that you defrauded the United States of something valuable. The statute they're trying to use, Mary, is one in which if you or I went onto a military base and stole a tank, that's the statute they would use to go after us. This is,
and if we were in the country
illegally,
this is
not what it was intended. Yeah.
If we were in the country illegally, they'd let us go.
You're
a former United States Attorney for the District of Utah, Kamala Harris, a former Attorney General for in California. Mm-hmm. What was your assessment of how she answered questions last night? I for me personally, the very first one, what are you going to do on day one? I thought, wow, this is how she answers these questions. Was she trying to be very defensive there? She didn't seem to be very aggressive. She seemed to be very toned down and very defensive to me, and I don't think she answered questions.
I think she has so many handlers in her ear right now that are saying,
literally,
hey, yep, you need to be, you know, generic in your responses. Don't give specific details. Don't let them trap you, put you in a corner. The fact is, though, she has painted herself in multiple corners by not just flip-flopping on issues, but when she declared, and I think we needed to listen to what she said very closely, but when she declared, when confronted about, you know, different positions she's taken, and she said, well, my values have not changed, that was right there the answer to all of our questions about what she'll do on policy. She will do the exact things that she outlined she would do when she was running for the Democratic, you know, nomination for president. She is going to be that bad on all of these policies. Right now is just a pretend show being put up in order to appease the middle so that she can try to beat Donald Trump.
Yeah, I just felt that this was a different Kamala Harris that we've seen. Now, we don't really see a lot of her, so, which is what they want. I think they want her to be vanilla. That she, it was almost, this is a combination of the Obama campaign from 08, right, where nobody knew who he was. He really didn't have a voting record. He voted present more than he voted yay or nay. He didn't really have a lot of substance to him. No, so they could make him whatever they wanted. And Joe Biden, where they just hid him for weeks and weeks and weeks. It seems to be a combination of the two, and I just don't know if that Frankenstein monster of that combination is working for her at all.
It's so funny you said that, because I thought I was clever when I deduced the same thing. It is absolutely a combination of both, which makes sense, because most of those that are, you know, controlling what happens right now, they're Obama people, and they've been controlling it for a long time. And she is, you know, on her own, unscripted, She is a disaster, a train wreck when it comes to having to address anything substantively. And she has always been that way. When she was AG, it's a problem of not thinking through issues and not having a grounded, you know, set of values that don't just twist and turn with every wind that blows. And that's why we're seeing what we're seeing in that combination. I think you articulated it perfectly, Mary.
Oh my gosh. Thank you. We should end on that. Well, listen, please tell your friends who, you know, your sources that, you know, say that Donald Trump and the Secret Service are working out how it's going to be if he goes to jail. Tell them that it's got to be a reality show. Put it on pay-per-view to raise money for Trump's campaign, because he will make millions off of that, because I want to see it. He's going to be buying commissary for everybody. He's going to be rocking it. I think it will be better than him out on the campaign trail, and that's how he gets around it. So I personally think that's the genius part of this conversation.
I think you're right. I'll pitch it.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Brett Tolman, thank you so much for joining me. You can find him on X at Tolman. Brett Tolman only has one L, though, so that's where it gets you. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thanks, Mary.
866-408-7669. Your call's coming up on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Learning something new every day on The Brian Kilmeade Show. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I think the most important and most significant aspect of my policy perspective and decisions is my values have not changed.
All right, so that was the vice president last night on CNN with Dana Bashan, her emotional support person next to her. And so she said she wouldn't answer questions when Dana was asking her about some of her flip-flops. And she said, well, no, my values have not changed. She just wouldn't answer that. We're just speaking with Brett Tolman. And he's like, there it is right there. You know what she believes. So this other stuff that she says, how do you believe that? When she says my values are everyone should have to drive an electric vehicle by 2030, my values are that there's no such thing as a person being illegal in a country. There's none of those things. So now you know what she believes. How does it go any other way? Now, here is J.D. Vance. He was on with Fox and Friends this morning, and he was talking about that, about her saying that her values have not changed.
Yeah, it's pretty bizarre, right? So if you have the same values, why have you changed your mind on literally every topic that you previously held an opinion on? But I think it's important for us not to buy this. If you look at the way that Kamala Harris is governed, she's actually governed as a far-left person. She's just trying to pretend that she's not far-left now because, of course, she wants to win the American people's votes over the next couple of months. But if she does, she's going to do the same thing that she's been doing for the last few years. She's going to try to make it harder to get American energy from American territory. She's going to make it harder for us to drive down the cost of everything from food to housing.
Yeah, she brought up again. She said, yeah, well, food's more expensive, but that's why she's talking about price gouging. So her solution to the policy that they created is to then give people money, as we heard Byron York talk about earlier this hour, give people money in order to afford the things that are really super expensive now because of the inflation. And what does that do? That drives up the inflation. So now what are you going to do? Well, we're going to put price controls in because these people are gouging, and we're going to tell them how much they can charge for their product. Well, that doesn't help the problem. That just makes it worse. Because then people can't pay their bills. They can't make the business work. So what do? The business is shut down and you have just a couple of big businesses, right? Because all the little mom and pop ones shop down. Some of the smaller competitors shut down. And so you just wind up with the big ones. You wind up with Walmart, with Amazon, the big businesses. That's what you're going to wind up with, the big suppliers. And then the government's going to say, well, these are monopolies. You can't have this. We're going to take them over. And then that's exactly what happened in Venezuela. This is we've seen this play several times before. How do people not know how it's going to end? And this is what she's advocating for. So she tells you exactly how she feels. Exactly what she means. You know, it's the same thing with immigration. where she raised her hand on that stage where they said, you know, do you think that illegal immigration coming into this country illegally should not be a crime? She raised her hand. She has said several times that she doesn't believe that immigration should be illegal. And then she goes back and says, let's go to cut 19 here. Cut 19. This is what she said when pressed on that, by that very fact, by Dana Bash. Here's what she said.
You raised your hand when asked whether or not the border should be decriminalized. Do you still believe that?
I believe there should be consequence. We have laws that have to be followed and enforced that address and deal with people who cross our border illegally, and there should be consequence. And let's be clear, in this race, I'm the only person who has prosecuted transnational criminal organizations who traffic in guns, drugs, and human beings. I'm the only person in this race who actually served a border state as attorney general to enforce our laws. And I would enforce our laws as president going forward. I recognize the problem.
So if you make me president, I promise I'll enforce the laws. But as vice president and borders are, not so much. Sorry. And she tells me I prosecuted transnational crime organizations who were trafficking in drugs and guns and human beings. Her administration, the Biden-Harris administration, has lost over 300,000 children. They just lost them. Don't know where they are. But if you make her president, then she'll start to do the job. Then she promises she's going to do it. Who believes this? Now, I know it's a dumb question because I know there's a lot of people who believe this, and you see them, they walk amongst us, and I'm sure you know people like this who believe that. And they don't believe that immigration and that problem's as bad as it is, or because of what they consume media-wise, they're ignorant. They don't know, and I don't say, they're uninformed. I hate to say ignorant because people get all offended when you say ignorant. They're uninformed. They haven't been told those truths. But you should really trust her, because when she becomes president, really, 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 then she's really going to enforce the law. Just not now as VP. I'm Mary Walter. You're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Yes, I am Mary Walter, sitting in for Brian. You can follow me on X at Mary Walter Radio. Catch my podcast Tuesday nights. It's live on YouTube and Gettr. Again, Mary Walter Radio. Just look for that, and all sorts of guests and sometimes no guests. And it's interactive. You can ask questions and leave comments. The audio is available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Again, look for Mary Walter Radio. Joining us now is Tom Barrett. Tom Barrett is a GOP congressional candidate for Michigan's 7th District. He is also a vet, and he has served before in the public sector. Tom Barrett, welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. How are you?
Good, Mary. Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. So you know, Michigan, to me, and maybe you can educate us maybe, but my initial thought when I think of Michigan is I think of a state that is very blue. I think of a state, maybe that's because I think of like Dearborn, Michigan, which I think, and Detroit. Those areas seem to be most of the press that your state gets. So I think of a very divided state where you have a very large Muslim population, which tends to go more left, as well as cities that obviously are much more left. So what's a Republican doing there? What are you doing?
Yeah, well, to answer your question directly, yeah, I mean, we have some Democratic strongholds in the state of Michigan, certainly Detroit being one, Wayne County, where Detroit and Dearborn are located, are skew pretty heavily Democratic. But we have a whole bunch of the rest of the state. This is a state of 10 million people, with people from all different walks of life and all different political ideologies. President Trump won Michigan in 2016. It's one of the top most competitive states in the entire nation. And I think the folks here in Michigan really want a change. They're dissatisfied with the direction the country has taken under the leadership of Kamala Harris and Joe Biden. And they want new change. And they, you know, want to elect new people. The district where I'm running does not include Detroit or Dearborn. I'm running in the 7th Congressional District, which is really kind of in the center, kind of heart of the state, if you will, centered around the city of Lansing, which is our state capital. And this is ranked as the most competitive and consequential congressional race in the entire country. It is one that has an almost perfectly balanced partisan makeup and one that will fundamentally determine the course of direction that we take in our country. Are we going to go down the same path that we're on with over 10 million illegal border crossings, with the cost of living crisis affecting family budgets, with crime that's plaguing our communities and national security threats that abound seemingly by the day and by the moment? Or are we going to chart a new path and a new direction? And that's my vision for the United States and fundamentally why I'm running for Congress.
Now, in 22, you lost to Alyssa Slotkin. And now she's running for U.S. Senate. She's incumbent, so she's no longer a factor. So you have three new names, which I think is helpful. That trying to fight an incumbent who has name recognition is always very hard. So you've got Curtis Hurdle running as a Democrat, and you've got Leah Daly running as Libertarian Party, and then you running as the Republican. What do you think are the factors in your district that make it ripe for a win for you?
Yeah, there are so many factors at play on the ground right here in the 7th District. The biggest issue I hear from folks when I go out and talk to voters either at their door or at, you know, small town festivals scattered around the district where I'm running, or just conversations I have out and about with my family, are really the struggles of the cost of living. Again, that is plaguing family budgets right now. The cost of groceries alone is up 20 or 30% just under Biden and Kamala Harris's governance, and issues of border security. Those are easily the top two issues that I hear when I talk to the voters in this district. And that's really the two biggest factors that I think are at play nationally in this election, are issues related to cost of living and border security and what type of direction we're going to take our country. You pointed out in your introduction, I'm a veteran. I served 22 years in the United States Army. I did deployments around the world. Flew helicopters in the Army. It was the greatest adventure of my life, but I want to keep going and I want to keep serving our country. And I think I can do that by winning this congressional district, representing my district proudly, and carrying out the next step values that we have for what we're going to do to put America back on the right track.
As a vet serving 22 years, thank you for your service. Did you ever, and by the way, you actually were in combat as opposed to Tim Walz, who served in Italy and fought the Battle of Cannolis, apparently. Did you ever accidentally steal valor because of a grammatical error, as Walz told us last night?
No, you know, I'm proud to be an Iraq War veteran. I did convoy security up and down the roads in Iraq. It was before I had gone to flight school and become a pilot. I'm proud of that service. I'm thankful that, you know, I came home and did not suffer any physical, you know, damages while I was in Iraq. And unfortunately and sadly, there are a lot more and many more who did suffer tragic outcomes. You know, I think when you're talking about military service, I respect anybody's service, whether they enlisted and were stationed domestically and never, you know, had the opportunity to deploy. Maybe they served in peacetime. Maybe they were never activated. You can't always, you know, predict where these things are going to go, but people take an oath to this country and to our Constitution. I respect everybody's service, but I think people have to be honest and candid about what that is. For him to suggest that this is a grammatical error is just entirely false. And then really one of the bigger narratives too is that he claimed to have been a retired command sergeant major. Now he was promoted to that rank on an interim basis, conditionally based upon criteria that he would need to complete in order to make that a official promotion. He didn't complete those requirements, so he was actually retired at the next lower rank, which again is admirable and honorable service, but he shouldn't be saying that he is a retired command sergeant major because he's actually retired at a lower rank. And the Kamala Harris website has now been updated to reflect that without any apology or any recognition from Tim Walz or the Kamala Harris campaign. They simply revise their statements and the media goes along with them.
Yeah, I don't. But you know what bothers me is the vets that also go along with this, the vets who are mad at Donald Trump, you know, for whatever manufactured BS that is out there. But they give him a free pass. And I don't understand that. There seems to be mental gymnastics. To my brain, right is right and wrong is wrong. Just say you're sorry. Mm-hmm. Say you screwed up. Yeah, you know what? Mm-hmm. I was wrong. I did it for the wrong reasons, or just say, I didn't even realize it. You know, it was my mistake. Mm-hmm. I apologize. Give a lame excuse, but at least apologize, own it. And he won't do that. And that to me is where the, is more egregious than any of it. He won't own it, but I just can't get past these vets who are, you know, for, you know, Harris and Walz. I'm like, wow, that's amazing to me. So I don't understand that at all.
You know, one of the biggest motivators for me to step up and run for Congress was when we all saw the unraveling, the train wreck in slow motion of what was going on in the withdrawal from Afghanistan, that Kamala Harris claims that she was the last person in the room as they were crafting this plan of how they were going to haphazardly withdraw from Afghanistan. 13 of our, you know, service members, the greatest treasure of our country, were killed entirely unnecessarily there. President Biden claimed, and the Department of Defense claimed, this was a great success of a mission. There's been no apology and no accountability. You know, General Milley and the entire ranks, you know, Lloyd Austin, the Secretary of Defense, completely lied to the American people and said it was a great success. And then they killed a carload of children just a couple days later, claiming it was an authorized strike against ISIS fighters. And it took the New York Times months to determine that that was actually false and that this was a car full of children. These are the things that our government lies to us about. I simply couldn't sit back and watch that any longer. I made the difficult decision to retire from the Army, something that had become such a part of my identity, and to put my efforts toward running for Congress to bring back accountability and respect in our military and accountability from those who lead our country.
We're kind of getting towards the end here. I want to ask you, how much of the other thing I think about when I think of Michigan is, of course, Detroit and, of course, cars, right? Manufacturing. This is the heartbeat. This is where it's done. How much has this push for electric vehicles, which nobody wants to buy, or even if you want to, they're insanely expensive. How much is that affecting the economy in your state?
Oh, it's a big effect right now. We've already seen these electric vehicle mandates that Biden and Harris are pushing for that will completely upend the auto manufacturing supply chain and jobs are in our state, and the downstream effect of all the parts suppliers and others that contribute to this economy to be upended by that. And American families, you know, are not choosing to buy electric vehicles, and they can't afford them either. I have four children. My wife and I are raising a family in the Biden-Harris economy and find it harder and harder every day to do that. And there's not an electric vehicle really out there that is affordable and would, you know, effectively allow a family of our size to go out and drive anywhere. So all of these things are really not well thought out. They are pushing these mandates and they're making it less affordable for American families. I'm fully, you know, supportive of the innovation that electric vehicles have brought about and can fully respect that without wanting to mandate that on families that don't want to buy them. I believe that every family ought to be able to choose a vehicle that meets their needs and fits their budget, not the social engineering decisions of unelected bureaucrats in Washington, D.C. that are trying to shove them down our throat.
Not only that, I can't imagine having four kids in an SUV and you're going to go sit for 20 minutes and charge this thing with four kids. Really? That's a form of torture. It should be outlawed.
Yeah. Well, I tell people they'll just count it toward purgatory someday.
Exactly. It's so funny. My mother would always say that to us. Don't worry, it'll get you out of purgatory faster. I'm like, thank you. I'm not quite sure. Tom Barrett, thank you so much for joining me. You can find him X at Tom Barrett, two T's and Barrett at MI7. So Tom Barrett, MI7 on X. Best of luck to you.
Thank you.
And I'm sure we'll be talking with you again.
Tom is our website. Love to engage with people that way. And, you know, we're going to need some help. This is the most competitive race in the entire country. So I look forward to winning this in just under 10 weeks.
Well, best of luck to you. Thank you so much for joining me here. 866-408-7669. I'll get to your calls, and we have so much to talk about coming up on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I'm Mary Walter in for Brian Kilmeade. So we were just speaking with Tom Barrett. He's running for office in Michigan, and he talked about the economy. It's the economy, stupid, the cost of living, immigration, the two big things for his area in Michigan. That's what, and I think that's across the country. I think the cost of living is a big deal for people all across the country. And it's so interesting because they keep telling us the economy is better and that, you know, unemployment's going down and inflation's slowing and, you know, things are doing great and the stock market's doing great. But it doesn't feel that way, does it? It doesn't feel that way. Had to buy a box of graham crackers yesterday, almost $5 for a box of graham crackers. So it doesn't feel that way. And I think you're starting to see it in a lot of different ways. So no matter what they tell us, it still just doesn't feel like the economy is doing well. So Fox is doing a series on a phenomenon that's happening in our country where seniors are heading back to work. So I just want to play a little bit of that for you. And then we're going to talk about how this economy, from your point of view, is it better like they keep telling us? Here we go.
A new survey shows some 20% of Americans are now unretired.
While the economy is forcing these seniors out of retirement, right now I'm at a bustling job fair. This morning I met an 80-year-old man who says he's blaming the cost of living and inflation for going back to work at his old age. He says this is a matter of survival. He was printing out his resume, getting ready for employers today. He is part of the fastest growing age group in the labor force, people 75 and older. Career Source Bauer has seen a significant rise in the senior population looking for resources. Compared to last year, even in the tax-friendly state of Florida, a national survey found one in four seniors in Fort Lauderdale are still working. A paid internship at 74 years old is the plot of a Hollywood movie, but the stark reality for Barry, who is their star intern here at Career Source Bauer, helping others find employment.
When you tell your friends you're an intern, what do they say?
Are you crazy? You know, you're supposed to be retired. And I have three different retirements, and it's not enough. I can't afford to eat. Can't afford to pay my utilities. You know, I'm barely making my condo payment.
A heartbreaking situation not only here in Florida, but all over the United States. Our seniors should be enjoying their retirement.
There actually was a movie called The Intern with a Robert De Niro, 70 years old. He's a widower, and he goes back to work because he wants to. It's not because he has to, but he does it because he wants to. I do think some seniors are returning to work because they want to. They're bored. I think that that's part of it as well. But I'm just curious, your personal economy, because I don't feel it. They keep telling me everything's better. Now, yeah, there's finally food back on the shelves. Remember a couple of years ago, there was nothing on the shelves. Although sometimes I go into a store and I'm like, this place looks like it's been robbed. There's no food. Like, what happened? But I got 12 items from a warehouse, one of the big warehouse stores that should belong to. It was $115. Now, granted, instead of getting one large Italian dressing, I got two Italian dressings. I get it. But, you know, things were on sale. I got $1.50 off, but it was still more expensive than I remember it being a couple years ago. So yeah, $1.50 off is great, but it's still more expensive even with the coupon. 866-408-7669. Let's quickly go to Brian in Orlando listening on WDBO. Brian, welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi.
Thank you, Mary. Good morning. You closed the last hour talking about how inflation is going to drive small businesses out of business and force them to close their doors, and we're going to be stuck with just the big guys. You implied, you know, look at Venezuela, it happened there. The reality is you can look at all across the country. We own a small pest control business in Orlando, and I am watching many, many, many of my friends closing their doors or selling to the big guys, because cost of business has gone up about 30%, and you could only pass 10-12% of that on to your clients. It's happening right now in other industries. And small businesses in this country not necessarily want to elect President Trump, but by golly, small businesses need to elect President Trump. It's dangerous.
It's a good point. I noticed it here at the Jersey Shore. Thank you so much for kicking it off here at the Jersey Shore. So one of the things we have on our home, because it's a really old home, is we have awnings. We have awnings on every window. And I will tell you, they lower the temperature of the house easily 10 degrees. So we save on our air conditioning costs a lot. But you have to have someone come and they put the awnings up and then they take the awnings down in September. So the awning company, it's very hard to find a company that'll do it. So we've had this company for years and we got a letter and we were told that, you know, some people, they actually had to cut their client base because they can't afford to keep servicing so many people because of insurance and gas and all that stuff. And they listed everything out of why they're cutting some people and why the rest of us are getting an increase in our bill. So instead of expanding the business because business is so good and so many people want their service, they actually had to cut it and make it smaller because they can't afford to keep going. And the guys, my regular crew that I saw every time, gone. Gone. So it's affecting everybody. More of your calls coming up on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Day one, it's going to be about, one, implementing my plan for what I call an opportunity economy. I've already laid out a number of proposals in that regard, which include what we're going to do to bring down the cost of everyday goods, what we're going to do to invest in America's small businesses, what we're going to do to invest in families.
And her plan's so good, she's not going to tell us about it until after she's elected. It's kind of like the Obamacare bill, the Affordable Care Act. Remember that? Nancy Pelosi telling us, well, we have to pass it to find out what's in it. It's like, wait, what? And we all know how that worked out. So basically what she's saying is, if you elect me, then I'll tell you about my awesome plan to bring the economy back. That's what she's going to do. She'll tell about it after she's in office. It's like, okay. So she was pressed. This is from last night's interview, if you want to call it that, with Dana Bash on CNN, Dana Bash on CNN. And here's the thing, as we listen to this, how many things were cut out of this? Because this was pre-taped. And the section with Bash and Harris and Walz was a total of, on my clock, and this was including her asking the questions, was 26 minutes, and everyone's saying it was like 18 minutes of actual answers. So only 18 minutes. Am I supposed to believe that they sat down for 30 minutes for an interview and that was it? I'm not buying it, right? Like, there was more. So what got cut out? If this is the stuff that got put in, what got cut out? This wasn't really an interview. This was an edited, in my view, propaganda piece for Harris and Walz. That's what this was. This was just to help her check the box. See, I did an interview. Now be quiet. Really wasn't. And Dana Bash gave her multiple choices on some questions. So is it this or is it this? Just ask her an open-ended question and let her go and see what happens. And I wonder if that's what got cut out of the interview. Anyway, so Dana Bash did a little pressing back here on some of Kamala's claims about the economy. Here we go.
You have been vice president for 3.5 years. Yeah. The steps that you're talking about now, why haven't you done them already?
Well, first of all, we had to recover as an economy, and we have done that. I'm very proud of the work that we have done that has brought inflation down to less than 3%. The work that we have done to cap the cost of insulin at $35 a month for seniors. Donald Trump said he was going to do a number of things, including allowing Medicare to negotiate drug prices. Never happened. We did it.
The insulin thing was driving me crazy last night. It was one of those moments where I start to yell back at the TV, and my husband sticks his head in the room and says, you know, she can't hear you, right? Trump did that. That was a Trump thing. And then Biden, of course, overturns it because he overturned everything and then goes back and says, we're going to cap insulin for seniors and took it as his own idea. These people are a bunch of plagiarists. Biden has plagiarized several times during his career. And we know Harris keeps taking all of Trump's policies. So that was a total lie. Also, when she kept saying that we had to recover as an economy and we did that, we brought inflation down to less than 3%. It's still higher than when you got it. Stop. In the third quarter of 2020, the economy grew at an annual pace of almost 35%. And this is from the Department of Commerce. The following quarter, it grew at an annual rate of 4.2%. In the first quarter of 21, the economy grew at an annual rate of 5.2%. So don't say that you had this struggling economy and everything was a mess when you got it. That's not true. Unemployment was falling. It had hit a high of 14.8% in April of 2020. The unemployment rate fell to 6.4% when she was sworn in as vice president. And so lies, 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 lies. But Joe Biden's doing the same thing. Oh, the economy was such a mess when we got it. No. Yeah, it wasn't as good as it had been before, but it was still on the way back. And then all the growth stopped. She also had said that they had brought all these jobs and these manufacturing jobs, 800,000 manufacturing jobs. That's a lie, too. So your personal economy, we've been talking about that this morning with our guests. I'm curious if you see the economy being better. They keep telling us that the economy is better, that prices are coming down, that, you know, and the supply chain has finally worked itself out. That's great. But they couldn't do anything because, first we had to work out this economy. And I don't know. I just don't think people see it. The U.S. economic growth for the last quarter, they say, has been revised up to 3% annual rate, which is considered quote unquote healthy. And that would, it was fueled by consumer spending and business investment. So we're spending more. I'm not spending more. Are you spending more? I'm not. I'm not spending more. We were going to make a big purchase and we had paperwork drawn up and offers in and the whole bit. And our financial advisor, when we were talking to him about it, pumped the brakes and said, nope, don't do it. Not before the election. Mm-mm-mm. And he's a Democrat. So I don't feel it. I don't know what's happening, but the numbers are not adding up to what I'm feeling anyway. 866-408-7669. Don in Ohio listening on WHLO. Don, welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi.
Hey, I got two questions and a statement. Now, one, she's talking about the electric cars. If you ask the computer how many congressmen have electric cars, it says very, very few. So she's not even getting support there. And then she's going after all these other gas companies and stuff for sticking it to the American people. But they've already said how bad the economy has been, and people are using their credit card. So their millionaire friends, if we miss one payment, they want to take it to 28%. Is she shutting that down to 12%? She's not doing anything there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, credit card debt is up. People are putting a lot of stuff on credit cards. So let me ask you, though, Don, how can the stock market be crazy and we're hearing that, job growth has been revised upward, so it's actually better? We know that the jobs numbers, the jobs that they created to have added, they added to the economy. Remember, they said that had to be revised downward, that there were over 800,000 fewer jobs than what they had originally claimed. That was a big oops. So the numbers aren't adding up to what's happening in people's personal economy. What's happening?
But why didn't they do something about that? If everybody's using a credit card, why didn't they say, hey, that's what not allowed to be. That should be 12%. But here's one major thing. Biden and his crew are missing out on one thing. They're in Michigan. Go to the Michigan football stadium, have a couple of football players introduce him, and explain to them if Biden would be allowed to give $800 million back, they're transferring it to the debt of the taxpayers. So if it's $800 million at 4% for 5 years, it's $32 million of interest in 5 years. And then we don't pay it back.
Yeah.
We need 28-year-old people. Explain it to them in detail.
I do think, I will say, Don, thank you so much. And to your point, I do think Donald Trump needs to get out there and just be more, just lay it out. RFK speech, when he laid out the lawfare and what the Democrat Party had done to him, I thought it was a great speech. He laid it out succinctly, easy to follow. I thought it was great. I love Donald Trump, but had he given that speech, it would have been 2 hours long, and he would have talked about Ukraine and the assassination attempt, all this stuff. Would have talked about it. It would have been all over the place. He's got to focus when he focuses and he gives a succinct speech and just lays the things out that's easy to understand, I think he wins over people. When he rambles on about all this different stuff and he goes off on tangents, I think he loses people. People punch out. So I think that that's one of the things that he definitely, definitely could improve upon greatly. Tim in St. Louis, welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Tim, hi.
Mary, good morning to you and happy Friday. Just a quick point on perception versus reality, being a communication instructor. I just wanted to let everybody know that the world we live in today, the perception of it has been just misconstrued by the media and everything else. You can look at different theories and all these other things. But Donald Trump needs to focus on the reality that he wants to share with his vision for the country. And he needs to share that and why it would better the lives of everyone and not just Republicans and conservatives. I voted for him the last two elections. I'm still having trouble considering voting for him this election. I may sit it out. I have a hard time trusting politicians. But to give everyone that vision of having that better reality, to change their perception, it is challenging. But I really hope he has that opportunity to do that over these next 67 or 66 days before the election. Thanks for taking my call today.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that, Tim. And I hope you don't sit it out. I really do. I hope you pull a lever. I may not agree with the person whom you choose, but I don't like sitting it out. That to me, and leaving it up to other people to decide your future and decide, you know, the direction of this country, I don't like it. I don't know. To me, it's kind of like the coward's way out. Sorry. And I get that Trump's not the best communicator. Obama was a great communicator. But Obama was the guy who'd take you out on a date. And this is a chick's point of view. But Obama was the guy who'd take you out to date, walk you to the door, and tell you, you know, how much, you know, what a great time he has. And he's going to call you in the morning. And then you never hear from him again. Donald Trump just tells it like it is. And I think people have a hard time with that. Does he ramble? Yes, he rambles. Not a great communicator in that sense. But I'd rather hear the truth than hear somebody lie to me just because they're good at lying. That's all. I think you got to cut through all the extraneous stuff. And you're a communications guy. You got to cut through the extraneous stuff. And you just got to go with what are the policies and look at the facts. And this is, you know, what's going to be best for my wallet. What's going to be best for my personal economy. More of your calls coming up, 866-408-7669 on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
We created over 800,000 new manufacturing jobs, bringing business back to America. What we have done to improve the supply chain so we're not relying on foreign governments to supply American families with their basic needs, I'll say that that's good work.
Yeah, she thinks, Kamala Harris thinks they're doing good work under the Biden administration. So in other words, Bidenomics, it's rocking. It's doing great. And that's part of the reason, Bidenomics, part of the reason why as many as 20% of people who have retired are now unretiring and rejoining the labor market in their 60s and 70s. Now, we live longer. Working in your 60s, I don't think is that big of a deal. I'm sorry. I just don't. We live a lot longer now. The only people who retire in their 50s are quote unquote public servants, teachers, cops, firemen, that kind of thing. They're the ones who retire in their 50s. And a lot of them go on and get another job and then work for another 10, 15 years. So I don't think it's that big of a deal. But there is, to me, a distinct disconnect between what we're being told about the economy and the numbers they're throwing at us and what we're seeing on a day-to-day basis in our personal economy. Josh in Dayton, Ohio, listening on WHIO. Josh, welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi.
Hi, Mary. Thank you for taking my call today. I appreciate it.
Of course.
So I'm a disabled vet. I have an income from that. I also have a bookkeeping business that I run, small. I also work for a school doing bus driving. I do a pizza joint on, you know, the weekends. I'm also going to school and getting an income from that, from my benefits from the military. So I literally have five incomes coming in and still trying to take care of my family feels like a struggle. So, you know, the fact that I'm having to do all this stuff just to keep my nose above, you know, the water to float, it seems ridiculous. It's, you know, I'm not looking for, you know, I know a lot of people say, oh, you know, veterans need, you know, free homes and stuff. I'm not looking for free stuff. You know, I want to work, you know, as part of the veteran community, we like to be proud that we earn what we've got, you know, so.
Right.
But at the same time, the fact that the VA and stuff like that says part of our, their motto is take care of veterans. And yet we have veterans that are struggling to get food, get housing, things like that, to provide for their families, speaks volumes about the economy and where we're at.
You know, part of, and I want to go into a little bit about what you said here, because what bothers me, and listen, I didn't serve and my husband did not serve, so I have mad respect for people who do, because it's a job that I have not done and I know it is so essential to this country. So thank you for that, because I really do have mad respect for that. And the families also serve at the same time. You know, nobody gives the family any kind of credit, but they also serve as well. You said that you do pizza delivery, right? You're a delivery driver. And I just read a story that those jobs are going by the wayside. Americans are being replaced by people, by illegals who have driver's licenses, because a lot of states will give these people a driver's license. So now they go out and they get a gig of pizza delivery or whatever it happens to be, and it takes that job away from you. And I have a real problem with this surge of illegals coming into the country and giving them credit cards or debit cards that have a couple thousand dollars on them. And it gets automatically renewed every month. Our vets don't get that. They're being put into apartments and into these hotels that were several stars in Midtown Manhattan, and now they're dumps. We don't do that for our vets. And I would think that the veteran community would be so up in arms about that, but yet I cannot tell you how many vets I see who just can't stand Donald Trump because they believe the suckers and losers hoax, or they thought, you know, they're believing what the misinformation is that's coming out now about Arlington and what happened there. That whole thing just shocks the living daylights out of me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really don't know what to do as far as some of that, because, you know, I hear the same thing from my veteran friends. I just don't know, who do we need to go to get that, you know, and that's part of why I've kind of put my foot down over the last month, because even during the summer, and I wasn't going to say any names, but, you know, Kroger had one or two cashiers sitting there, you know, bringing people up. I was like, well, I've got nothing else to do. Let me apply and, you know, I'll help my community by getting people through the line faster. They even denied me and said, oh, we're going to go a different direction. You don't fit. It's not, I mean, no offense to cashiers. I know they do work hard when they're actually, you know, working, but it's not that hard to do that job. It's a minimum type wage or just above minimum wage job. It doesn't require a degree, and you have to turn down a veteran that's willing to help your company that, you know, earned, you know, a couple billion dollars in the last few years and that kind of thing. It's just, it's mind boggling.
Yeah, you know,
I would love to help.
Yeah, the new, and I love that you say, and I don't mean to cut you off, but we're up against the clock, so I apologize for that, Steve. But thank you. And listen, I hope that you find a job where you don't have to have five or six jobs, but you are going to school, and I think that that's fantastic, you know, so maybe you can just have one job instead of several. I do think that hiring vets should be a priority. I'm a big fan of hiring the best person for the job. I'm old-fashioned that way. That's what I think. The most qualified person should get it. But you know, the new direction everybody's going in is you have to check it out yourself. And I hate it because there's always a problem and the machine yells at me, please place the item. I'm like, I'm placing the item. I hate it. It goes against everything. I'm not getting anything less expensive. In fact, everything's more expensive. And you have one checker and all these other automated things, and you pay one guy to stand there and watch over his workers while we self-check out our stuff. And it never scans the coupons. It's just so annoying. And if I'm not invited to the Christmas party, I truly don't think that I should be doing the job. Because if I'm now an employee, I want to know what the benefits package is, etc. So I deeply resent it. It's terrible. My husband doesn't let me go shopping anymore because I get so worked up about it. It's really terrible. So God bless you, Steve, for wanting to be a checker. God, I can't do it. I'm Mary Walter. You're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
From high
atop Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Yes, I'm Mary Walter, sitting in for Brian Kilmeade. You can follow me on X at Mary Walter Radio. If you leave text me, I'll try to get to your comments during the show. If I can do that, I try to multitask a little bit, but I still got to pay attention. You can also find my podcast. It is live on Tuesdays at 7:15 p.m. Eastern Time on YouTube and on Getter. You just look for Mary Walter Radio. It's interactive, so you can be part of it. And the audio is also available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Again, look for Mary Walter Radio. Joining us now, Josh Krashour. He is a Fox News Radio political analyst. He is also the editor-in-chief of Jewish Insider. You can follow him on X at Josh Krashour. That's K-R-A-U-S-H-A-A-R. But I think if you just start typing it in, it'll pop up. Josh, great to talk to you. Welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. How are you?
Hey, Mary. Great to be back with you.
So, I assume that you watched what everybody was watching last night or listening to it. And I think you walk away with something different when you watch something versus when you listen to it versus when you read the transcript. You come away with a different opinion. But let's start with your overall opinion of the 18 minutes that Kamala Harris actually spoke last night.
Yeah, look, I thought it was an adequate performance by the vice president. We heard her have to respond to her evolution on issues like immigration, border security, and the Green New Deal. I think, you know, I could have used some more follow-ups. I think it actually, you know, her record goes beyond just the flip-flops and inconsistency in her record go beyond those issues. I think the issue of crime and law and order is an important one that didn't get addressed in the interview. And if she had Governor Walz sitting next to her, I would have loved to hear about his handling of the riots in Minneapolis after the George Floyd killing. I think her view on criminal justice would have been an important issue to cover, especially with Walz there. That's one of those issues that actually, if you want to look at a progressive position that they both held, and as, at least in 2020, that is going to be a big one, I think, on the campaign that the Trump campaign has also gone after them on. It is crime. So I would have liked to see that addressed. But look, you've got 18 minutes. There's not a whole lot of time. I understand the challenge with an interview like this. If this is the only interview she does, it's a problem. Like she's gonna have to open herself up more to really explain where she stands in more depth on these big issues. But I think the big takeaway is clear. She's trying to position herself more to the center. She's trying to etch a sketch frame that the Romney campaign talked about in 2012, where his positions in the primary are no longer operative because we're in a general election. Well, she's trying to tonally at least get there. I thought she's trying to kind of thread that needle where the base and the swing voters can both find something to like from what she has to say. So look, I think she did an adequate job. There was no word salad by my ears. Like, she answered the questions adequately, but I think there's a lot more that needs to be answered, and I hope she continues to be willing to. I mean, she's a presidential nominee. She should be taking more and more questions as we get closer and closer to the election.
Yeah, I for one am wildly disappointed there was no word salad. I was so let down by that entire thing. I was totally looking for it. I thought she was almost getting into it a little bit when she started talking about not the significance of the passage of time, when she said deadlines around time. I'm like, oh, she's going, and she pulled herself out of the spin. So I was a little annoyed by that. That interview last night to me was what you would expect from an introduction to a candidate who's doing their first run at an office. It didn't seem to me to be an interview that you would do with a presidential candidate, and the election is 2 months away. That's not what it seemed like to me. It seemed to be a very introductory, light, get to know the candidate, you know, and just the overall view of the candidate. That's what it seemed like to me. And I don't think she's going to do any more. I don't think she's going to dig deeper. I don't see that coming.
Well, I think it depends on how she does it in the polls. I mean, I don't think her campaign can look at the numbers right now and feel comfortable about where they stand. I think they may have a slight advantage, but look at the Wall Street Journal poll out today. She's up by 1 point nationally. That's too close for. I mean, she's going to have to develop a debate. She's going to have to expose herself, I think, to more and more questions, because it'll become a negative narrative that I don't think would be beneficial to her campaign. And yeah, no, I agree with you, Mary, that, you know, it did feel like it was almost like a parent-teacher conference
instead of an interview
with a potential commander-in-chief, right? I mean, there was a little bit of the optics. It was taped in Savannah, Georgia, at a coffee shop. It didn't seem like it had the gravity. I mean, it seemed like it was a smaller setting than really having one of these rare interviews to talk about potentially the next president of the United States.
Yeah, I don't think the setting was well at all. But to your point about the polls, oddsmakers, according to Newsweek, the vice president went from being the favorite to win with odds of 52.4% on Thursday to tied with Donald Trump at 51.3% each this morning. And this is according to Star Sports Betting Company. Over the same period, Trump's odds of winning improved from 48.8% just before the interview to 51.2%, according to Betfair out of the UK. So they're saying that this didn't go super well for her. And to that point, if you saw this, I want to go to cut 26. This is Ashley Allison, and on CNN afterwards, they had their panels and they rotated people in and out. And Ashley Allison, during this analysis, at certain parts, I'm like, oh man, she is totally shilling for Kamala Harris here. Here's what she had to say when she was asked that question overall about kind of what we're talking about. What did you think?
Now, you might not like the way she answered him, but she answered him as a capable, qualified leader. And I do think she moved the ball forward a little bit. You know, maybe she didn't score a touchdown.
She moved the ball forward a little bit. The bar was low to begin with. Like, the bar was, oh, please, Lord, don't let her, you know, talk herself into a word salad and go off on some weird tangent. That was the bar. And right. We come out with the praises. Well, she moved the ball forward a little bit.
So the context I would provide in analyzing the interview is, number one, I think Republicans not smartly lowered the bar so low.
Yes.
If you're going to be the next president of the United States, word salad, you know, if that's the bar, then we're at a pretty low bar.
Yep.
So, I think that Republicans and Trump in particular seem to not know how to play the expectations game. So, time-tested part of politics where you actually raise expectations for your opponent so they fall below it. And in the case of Trump, often they lower the expectations. And the Democrats don't do that well, but they managed to just get above that low bar. So I think that was a mistake in terms of – I heard a lot of pundits on CNN, Fox, and other networks just lowering the bar so much that I think it's frankly easy to state a few talking points in 18 minutes and get through that moment. And I don't think it was good expectation setting. You know, I also think that, like, when you think about the American public in the last couple of years, Joe Biden couldn't put a complete sentence together, and he was getting increasingly incoherent in his interviews than he did. And Donald Trump tends to, like, also be sort of a poor communicator at times. He certainly gets his points across, but he tends to ramble and sometimes isn't as crisp and effective as he otherwise could be. So, you know, I think compared to, like, the presidential rhetoric we've heard in recent years, you know, maybe the bar should be low because it's been a while since we've heard sort of the type of commanding a clear rhetoric from a potential president.
Yeah.
You know, it's been a while. And if you listen to Joe Biden, for God's sakes, I mean, you know, it was hard to kind of make out a lot of times what he was saying. It was almost like you're just sitting at the edge of your seat hoping he gets through the interview. And he got to the point where he had to step down from the race. So compared to those low standards, maybe Harris gets a passing grade.
Before we run out of time here, one of the things that I think is so amazing is the issue of immigration. And it's becoming a real problem. You have hospitals closing along in our southern states, our southwestern states specifically. California, it's happening because of the debt that's being run up from treating these people when they cross the border. A lot of them come here. They're pregnant. They want their baby born in the U.S. because, woohoo, free ticket. Or they come over and they have horrible illnesses and they want to get treated in the U.S. And so it costs thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars for this. And so you have hospitals going bankrupt along the border. That doesn't make people happy. You have stories of what happened with these in California where they tried to get on a school bus. They're trying to get on school buses. So they're showing up at the bus stops and these illegals are trying to get on school buses. So now they're telling parents, well, if we see illegals at the school bus stop, we're not stopping to pick up your kids. You have some places where busing has been cut for American children, but the illegals are going to be picked up. The children will be picked up. And then you have what's happening in Aurora where Venezuelan gangs are literally taking over apartment complexes Texas, and they're armed. They robbed a whole bunch of firearm stores in the area, so now they're armed to the teeth. You have this happening, and at the same time, NBC News is reporting that the Biden administration, as soon as this week, is going to start that program that would fly in people from Cuba, Haiti, Nicaragua, Venezuela, and Ukraine. They're going to bring them back, despite finding that there's a boatload of fraud in this program, with, you know, something like 3,000 of the applications being with an address to a warehouse. And they're going to be spending more money on sanctuary cities and NGOs. To me, I think this is going to fly under the radar for the most part in news cycle wise, even though NBC is reporting it. And we know they're, you know, to me, propaganda. Wouldn't you think they would hold this until after the election? This doesn't seem to be smart. Are they that tone deaf?
Well, look, I mean, I think you're hitting on one of the important political points in this election when it comes to immigration, which is that the rise in migration and illegal immigration from the southern border has led to a strain in social services. And that's why this has become more than just a base issue, right? I remember when covering politics a couple of decades ago, immigration was like strictly confined to sort of conservative Republicans talking about it. When you look at deep blue mayors like the mayor of New York, the mayor of Chicago, raising the specter of so many people coming in that they're using hotels to house illegal migrants, and you know they're having trouble the schools are suffering as a result of having to enroll all these kids in that don't speak English and are really putting a strain on the services for the community. So you're actually seeing immigration in the Fox poll that came out of the Sunbelt states this week. Economy was the number one issue. Immigration was the number two issue, and a whole lot of independents and even some Democrats said it was a problem. So the stories that you're citing are experienced by a whole lot of Americans, and it becomes less of an abstract issue and more of a day-to-day quality of life issue. And that's why Harris is scrambling in her interview last night, right, to talk about how she wanted a bipartisan border deal that Republicans opposed, and that's how they're trying to frame it. But I don't think a lot of voters sense that she has the energy or the real cares about the issue as much as many other politicians do. And she certainly was responsible for immigration in her portfolio at the beginning of the Biden administration, and the record speaks for itself.
I'm just so floored. When I was reading those stories, I saw them yesterday, and I was like, what? Like, and this was before she did the interview, and you knew she was going to be asked about it. But again, she didn't really give anything substantive. There was nothing substantial. It doesn't seem to me as if they're trying to win over any kind of independent. It just seems to me as if they're happy with their base. They think that's enough to win, and maybe that combined with possible shenanigans if anything happens. I don't know. I'm not saying that's going to happen. But it just doesn't seem as if there's any kind of attempt being made to win over independents. That'll be my last comment to you. Go ahead.
Yeah, look, Mary, I think if you look at the strategy and you look at the playbook, they're trying to recreate the 2020 Biden, the anti-Trump Biden coalition. People voted for Joe Biden in 2020 not because they loved Joe Biden, but because he wasn't Donald Trump. And I think you're seeing a similar dynamic now with the Harris campaign, where they're just trying to just do enough to get those voters, both some people who are more moderate, but maybe they don't like Trump, to people who are younger and, you know, the base of the party that may not have loved Joe Biden, but definitely didn't want Donald Trump in office. And she's been, Biden was losing a lot of that base on both sides when he was in the race. Harris is trying to put that together, and she's trying to, deal with constituencies that may not agree with each other on all the issues, but trying to kind of slow walk that coalition back into an existence. And look, that if you look at the polls, it's kind of remarkably similar. The numbers are remarkably similar in the national polls to where Biden was in 2020, at least in the results of the 2020 election.
And yet then we have Trump on the other side, who actually is building a coalition, and I love it. I think it's fantastic, and hopefully that will help pull the independents in, and people who maybe are a little bit more moderate Democrats will pull it into a coalition. We'll see. Josh Crosher, thank you so much for joining me. It was a pleasure getting to speak with you again.
Thanks, Mary. Good to talk to you.
866-408-7669. Let's get your calls next on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hear the ins and outs of the 2024 election right here. The Brian Kilmeade Show. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
the idea that you said that you were in war. Did you misspeak, as the campaign has said?
Yeah, I said we were talking about, in this case, this was after a school shooting, the ideas of carrying these weapons of war. And my wife, the English, you told my grammar's not always correct. But again, if it's not this, it's an attack on my children for showing love for me, or it's an attack on my dog. I'm not going to do that. And the one thing I'll never do is I'll never demean another member's service in any way. I never have, and I never will.
Tim Walz blamed his stolen valor on grammar and compared it to them attacking his dog. I don't know. I think stolen valor, it's a big deal. I don't know how you don't know the rank at which you retired. I don't know how you don't know that you were not in combat. How does that happen? I think those are things you remember, right? There's certain things in life that you look at and go, I haven't been in your shoes, but I think I would remember whether I was being shot at or not. Apparently not Tim Walz. Let's quickly go to Arthur in Arizona here. Arthur, you're on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi.
How you doing?
Good. Go ahead.
I apologize for any background noise or whatever, but I don't like to talk about these things. And I want to tell you about Tim Walz. I'm 100% disabled Marine. I spent a long time in the hospitals, VA hospitals, military hospitals. I had to learn how to walk again because of the injuries I've sustained in the Marine Corps. And I had the opportunity on the spine wards, along with a lot of other Marines and Army guys and stuff, to listen to stories of these guys. And you see them. They wear hats. They wear the recon hat, the SEAL hat. They wear all this stuff. And you hear the stories they talk about, and they're completely off. They're wrong. They lie. They completely – we call them professional veterans. That's what we dubbed them on the spine war. They tell stories of things they never did. There was a guy who was telling a story of doing an operation in a territory the team I was on was controlling. So we would have known. And it was an absolute lie. And to hear these people talk, it's just incredible to – I don't even know how many years I had in the service. It was 5 years and something. They gave me my paperwork, and I just threw it in a file. I don't know, because everything after I got injured was just a blur. Right. And so my focus was getting better for my family. The Marine Corps was so far behind me and such a small part of my life. After they handed me my papers, I threw all my military gear in the trash, except for my field gear. I took it to the Army Navy store, and I gave it to the guy. I said, just take this stuff. I don't want any more. I don't want anything to do with it except for my poncho liner. We call it a woobie. And that's the best thing to sleep under in the field. You want to make a Marine smile, a field Marine, tell him about his woobie. Ask him about his poncho liner. He'll smile like crazy.
You know what? I wish I had more time with you, Arthur. I'm sorry. I really, my heart really breaks for you, and I don't say that flippantly. To hear that story really hurts me. I feel for you, and God bless you. Really, God bless you. Because coming up, I'm going to tell you a story very quickly that's in the news that I think is going to bother you, but it really proves Arthur's point. That's coming up next on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
And I'm Mary Walter, sitting in for Brian Kilmeade. If you want to jump in, it's 866-408-7669, 866-408-7669. You can reach out to me on X at Mary Walter Radio. There's no S, there's only one of me, so it's at Mary Walter Radio. So we're just speaking with an incredible man, a vet, disabled vet, fully disabled Marine, and his experience and how sad it is what he's going through. And you know, then you have people like Tim Walz and Dick Blumenthal and others who, you know, get accused of stolen valor. And it's always a mistake. And it's always Democrats. Do you ever notice that? It's always Democrats. Because if it was a Republican, they'd go to jail. But it's always Democrats, and they never go to jail. And there's always like a weird reason. And did you notice Tim Walz last night didn't apologize? And I thought that that was very egregious. There was no apology last night. And then what do we see this morning? Wes Moore ran for governor of Maryland in 22. And he was introduced twice as having received a Bronze Star for his Army service in Afghanistan. And at least once, he did say he received the award. He's a Democrat, shocking, and he's now the governor of Maryland. And he made the claim on an application for a White House fellowship in 06 when he was 27 years old. And that's according to the New York Times. They filed a FOIA request. And he wrote, "For my work, the 82nd Airborne Division have awarded me the Bronze Star Medal and the Combat Action Badge." He submitted the application in January 06, but when he submitted it, he had not been awarded either the Bronze Star or the Combat Action Badge. He was awarded the Combat Action Badge in May of 06. But there's no record showing that he ever received the Bronze Star. And now it has come to light again with everything that's happening with Tim Walz. And once again, it was an honest mistake. I've not served in the military, but I think when you retire, you know the level at which you retire, or when you leave, when you're discharged, you know where you were. You know, you kind of know the medals you received. I don't know. Like, I still have my sash from Girl Scouts with my badges on it. I'm not comparing them, but I'm just saying it. I still have my sash. My mother, you know, it was one of the things my mother gave me when they cleaned out the house. And they're like, "Here, take it." It was my Girl Scout badge, my sash. And I'm like, oh, and I look at all the badges. I don't know what they're all for anymore, but I look, oh, look at that. So I would think you would remember something like the Bronze Star. I don't think that's an honest mistake. He said his commanding officer, he had included the commendations on the advice of a superior officer and a mentor who helped craft his White House application, because they had started the process, you know, of going through the paperwork for it, but he was never awarded it. I just don't buy that. Like, to throw somebody else under the bus for that. You're the one who signed that application. You're the one who chose to put it on there, even though you did not receive it. So, I don't know. It just seems to be a problem with the Democrats, and they always seem to get a free pass, and it's really, really annoying. Okay, let's lighten it up just a little bit, because this story, I can understand this, and I don't know if it's that horrible. I don't know. So, this happened in China on a flight on Juneyao Airlines, and they were flying internally in China, and there was a toddler who was flying with her grandparents. And this toddler, I don't know if she identifies as a girl or not, but we'll call her she. And she cried non-stop during the entire flight, 3 hours, non-stop. So two passengers said, "Let us handle this." Her grandmother said, "Fine, take her. She's yours." And they went and they sat in the bathroom with the child. And they videoed this. And they posted this on Chinese social media. And it shows them inside the locked bathroom. Now, all I can say is the bathrooms on Chinese airlines have to be much bigger than ours, because I can barely stand being in there by myself. Like, I will dehydrate myself purposely starting the night before, right after dinner, before a flight. And I will not take in any liquids, like just take a pill. That's it. I purposely dehydrate myself so that I don't have to go to the bathroom on a plane. So they post this picture. It shows both of them inside the locked bathroom with the girl she's about a year old, and she's just screaming bloody murder. And a woman who's sitting on the toilet told her that, "We won't let you out unless you stop crying." So the girl stops crying, and the woman filming the video picked her up and told her, "If you make any noise again, we're coming back to the bathroom." So this has caused a ton of controversy. Criticism mounted. The airline customer service department had to apologize for the incident and the, quote, oversight of the crew. They had to condemn the two passengers' behavior. One of the women who posted the video online said her intention was to ensure, quote, a restful flight for other passengers. But then all these social media users piled on her. So it's nice to know that this insane, you know, sensitivity is not just here in the U.S. It's all over the world. And someone said, "Adults in their 30s can have emotional breakdowns, but people don't allow toddlers to have theirs. We were all once children. Don't be a cold-blooded adult." First of all, if I was 30 and having a meltdown like that, that just didn't happen. That's a now generation thing. And I know I sound super old and I'm keeping the ball if it comes in my yard, but I kind of get it. I don't know what was wrong. Was this cruel? I don't know if this was cruel. How is this cruel? They got the kid out of a tantrum. They didn't beat the kid. They didn't hit the kid. They took the kid in the bathroom. and said, okay, when you stop crying, we'll leave. I've had to do it with my nieces, where I was somewhere and my niece is out of control screaming, and I took her outside and I put her in the back of the car, and we sat in the back of the car. I didn't leave her in there by herself. We sat in the back of the car and I said, look, when you stop screaming, we'll go back inside. But not until then. And she had her little temper tantrum and she worked it out. And when she stopped, she said, okay, I'm done. I'm like, all right, let's go back in. Is that cruel? Is that terrible? She doesn't need to have her tantrum in front of a whole bunch of people. So I took her outside. You couldn't take her outside because it's plain. So I took her into the bathroom. I don't know. Is that terrible? Am I missing something? I don't have kids. So, you know, pile on. That's fine. But my mother, my parents did that when we were kids. If we were not behaving in a restaurant, I mean, there was also a certain age where my parents would not take us on planes. They're like, I want to go to Disney. My mother's like, no, you're not fit for flying. It's not happening. Like, there were places my parents wouldn't take us. They're like, you're just not fit for public. It's just the way it is. Not going. My parents, if I was in a restaurant or my brothers or whatever, and somebody was melting down, my mother took that kid and out to the car you went. Now, back in the day, they'd lock the doors and leave you in the car. No adult, and they come back in and finish their meal, and then they go back out and see how you're doing. Nowadays, you can't do that. So now you sit in the car with the kid. What's the difference? I don't know. What am I missing here? I actually think it was brilliant. These people came up and said, okay, let me handle this. Let me help you out, Grandma. I can see you're at the end of your rope, and so is everybody else on this plane. We're in a confined space together. What do you think? 866-408-7669, 866-408-7669. You can reach out to me on X at Mary Walter Radio. I don't know. I think this was okay. But I think everyone is just so sensitive nowadays. That's terrible. That's horrible. You're a horrible person. And they had to be condemned by the flight attendants and by the airline. And I bet you because it's China, their social credit score has gone down now. So they're not allowed to fly anywhere because they tried to help out. Yeah, I don't see it. Tell me if I'm wrong. I'll get your calls coming up, and you can also reach out to me on X at Mary Walter Radio. I'll get your comments there as well. And, of course, more of your calls on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Educating, entertaining, enlightening. You're with Brian Kilmeade. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome back to the Brian Kilmeade Show. I'm Mary Walter sitting in for Brian Kilmeade. 866-408-7669 is my number. A lot of people want to talk about the military aspect and Tim Walz and the stolen valor and the allegations and does some comments on what some of previous callers had to say. So let's go to Georgia and Roy listening on WVGA. Roy, welcome. You're on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi.
Hi, Mary. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You can dispense with all the questions about Tim Walz's military career. The only thing you need to ask him is to provide a copy of his DD-214. It's a military document that it's the profile of the military member from the day he joined the service to the day he got out, dates of promotion, dates of awards, commendations, how he was discharged, whether it was honorable, less than honorable. Anytime an employer hires a vet, they ask to see a copy of the 214. And he's applying for a job for America. So we should ask him for a copy of the DD-214 and put this sergeant major thing to rest, because it'll tell you whether he did or didn't. If it was a temporary promotion, it'll be in there. But when he retired, it will show the rank that he retired. So you don't need to ask him any more questions or guess or go by hearsay or anything.
It clearly shows, though, you know, Eric Holder did the vetting of these potential running mates. And Wes Moore was one. And we're finding out now that Wes Moore now claimed he received a bronze star, and he never did. So this is a problem with Democrats and clearly the vetting process that they go through, because did they not know that he didn't receive it, or did they not ask for that piece of paper? Did Eric Holder not know to ask for that, or did they just think it was going to be swept under the rug and it would be handled the way it's being handled now, which is no big deal, and he's going to get away with it?
Well, I think they think that the majority of the people out there are stupid, and we're not. It's the information is out there. All you have to do is go get it. And again, you don't have to ask any more questions. You don't have to guess. You don't have to rely on hearsay or I spoke to so-and-so who served with him. No, get his DD-214, and it's like his biography.
Interesting. And, all right. Thank you for that, Roy. It's good to know. I did not know that, so that's good to know. I want to switch gears a little bit here. John in South Carolina wants to talk about Trump. We really didn't talk about him that much, did we? John, welcome.
Hello, Mary. How are you? Listen, there's a very important topic which hasn't been brought up, and this affects the younger generation, 18 to 29s, their mothers and families. Now, listen to this. The youth does not trust the military. They don't like the way the veterans are treated. The youth is tired of forever wars. They mm-hmm. saw the disaster of the Afghan withdrawal, on and on and on. Now, the last draft we had in this country ended after the Vietnam War in about 1975, 74. The first draft was Woodrow Wilson, then FDR. Truman reinstigated the draft after World War II that lasted to 75, all Democrat administrations. Now, the Army is running about 30-35% behind on new recruits. Mm-hmm. The Navy's taking a hit, too. Who's going to run the armed forces? They don't trust the Democrat Party. I will bet you a dollar to the hole in the donut that a good question to ask would be, or bring up the point that the Democrats will probably have to reinstigate conscription, the draft. Mm-hmm. And this should be a talking point brought up by all Democrats in local, state elections and the federal stuff.
You are right. I actually bring that out when I'm, on X, or if I'm speaking with someone who especially a young person, they're saying, like, look at us. We're going to turn it blue. We're going to turn Texas blue. And they're young. They're my first. Like, I'm so excited. I'm like, are you registered for the draft? Because I heard the Middle East is getting hot. And they ignore it. They don't want to hear it. But you need to. They're running on vibes, and that's what the Democrats are doing. It feels good. These kids need something to feel good about. It's an emotion-driven generation. And so they're playing to their emotions, and it's working. And listen, when we were young, what did we really know when it came to voting? What did we know? Nothing. We really didn't. Most of us, we weren't that involved. Who are we kidding? We thought we were. But unfortunately, they're not baked yet. And unfortunately, if they do vote blue, there is a really good chance that they're going to find themselves in a position where they're not super happy. And that's the folly of youth, right? But it's a great point, John. Thank you so much. Let's stick with the name John. It's a good one. And go to Jacksonville, Florida, and WOKV. John, welcome. You're on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi.
Hi, Mary. You do a great job when Brian is out, so thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. All right. So I'm a Marine Corps veteran, and I served when Ronald Reagan was in. And I was ready to go to combat, but I never served in combat. And I served 4 years honorably, and but never claimed all these years, never claimed to have been a combat veteran out of respect for all of those who have served. And when you look at it, Tim Walz has all of the indicators of a pathological liar.
Yes.
As you see, with
yes.
absolutely right. Am I correct?
Yes. Yeah, that it's a lot. They just keep piling up. Then there's another, the IVF thing, right? It's
correct.
Just one after the next after the next.
Correct, and he's used it, his pathological lie, to work his way through politics. So, but anyway, I just wanted to say that out of respect, I never said. So I served in the Marines, in the military, never went to war. And that is a distinct difference that he should never do. Thank you very much. God bless. And you do a very good job when Brian's out. Thank you, Mary.
Thank you so much, John. And I appreciate that. My mother always used to say, because we would ask about my dad, you know, my dad was in the military and he was a radar specialist in New Jersey. And my mother always used to say, because kids want to know, did dad go to war? Did dad go to war? My mother's like, yeah, your father fought the Battle of the New Jersey Turnpike on his way to Fort Dix every day. We were so disappointed. His kids were like, "Aw," but that's what he did. He was, he was stateside. He was a radar spy. I don't think we were at war when my dad was in, but we were so fascinated by the whole thing, and that's what we were told. And to this day, we're like, "Yeah, my dad fought the Battle of the Turnpike." That's it. All right, one more here. Mike in Texas, you get the last word here. Mike, welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi.
Well, I've got two things to tell you. First of all, my Thunder got stolen over the DD-214. I still carry mine, and I got out of the Army in 1979. I was there during the first parts of the volunteer Army. I was in high school when the draft ended, and we all knelt down and kissed the floor at Amarillo High School. Then we passed a petition for the janitor to change the flavor of that wax.
Yeah.
But, that was the 70s, and if anybody remembers it, they are lying, because when I was in, I was in peacetime, but then I went in the National Guard for a few years to finish out my obligation. And while I was in, they were developing the toys that they're using now. Thank God they never attacked San Antonio, because at Fort Sam Houston, I was there when they brought the people in from the Tenerife airplane crash. And, I was a journalist, so I got to cover a lot of things, and I was access, so they gave me a T-39 with those little Learjets.
Mike, I've got 20 seconds.
Spurs, the Cowboys and those guys. But, it's one of those things that it's in my DD-214. And when I got out, they asked me for that to go get jobs. You have to have that to go get your benefits. You've got to have that form.
Yeah. I don't mean to cut you off, but we're up against time. So I never knew about that form before. But it says to me that Eric Holder didn't do much vetting. And I wonder if the Democrats do the vetting, but they just don't care. And I think that that's really, really sad. Right? I'm Mary Walter, and this is The Brian Kilmeade Show.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network, subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.